Welcome to the 266th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Thank you for listening and tuning in. This is kind of a sad start to this episode. I lost one of my running buddies this week, Samantha, my German Shepherd dog, who was about to be 9 years old. She passed away from canine degenerative myelopathy, which is basically a disease of the spinal cord that is thought to be genetic, prevalent in German Shepherds, where if they have two genes, one from each parent, then it's very likely that they'll get the disease. If they have one gene, not as likely. You can do genetic testing when dogs are bred. Our dogs are all rescues, so we really don't know what their background is. Samantha was dropped off at a vet's office because her owner didn't want her. And we suspected that she had a little GI issues, that she kind of had an acid stomach. So if she had a little snack of kibble before she went to bed, she was perfectly fine. But we suspected that the person that had her was afraid that they'd have big vet bills, so they just walked away and left her at the vet's. And 6 months later, after being in a crate, they surrendered her to a rescue, and that's where we got her. And Samantha was my number one running buddy. I called her my rear line of defense because she would run behind and Gretchen would run in the front, and she kind of watched behind me all the time, what was coming. And she was always on the lookout. She told Gretchen when she needed to bark or when she needed to do something. So she was, again, kind of in command from the background. We had a great connection in that she had these big deer eyes, and she was always watching me, and we had this connection. She kind of always knew what I was thinking. And this particular disease occurs over, 6 to 9 months with progressive weakness of the hind legs. And it will actually progress up and involve the front legs. And I knew, when she started to have some symptoms of weakness, dragging her back foot a little bit or just some tripping, I pretty much knew what was going on. She had no pain. She didn't like running so much. We backed down her mileage, and then we ultimately just did a walk, and then we did a shorter walk. But the idea was that there's no cure for this. She ate a vegan diet with fruits and vegetables, which she loved. I hope that gave her a little bit longer, perhaps. I don't know. But the idea was that I would never make her quality of life suffer because I needed to have her around. And when she got to the point here recently where she couldn't walk from room to room, she gave me the look like it's time. And with a heavy heart, we decided to help her go across the Rainbow Bridge with the aid of a vet. And I'm really sorry to see her go. We've had rescue German Shepherds. This Samantha was our, we've had four so far. And we'll rescue again, and we'll rescue German Shepherds because we just love the breed. A lot of people misunderstand them. They're a big dog. People think of them as being aggressive. They're not. They're very dedicated to their owner. They're very kind and loving. And there's just a good way to communicate with them. Most of my shepherds work very well off leash. They don't run away. They're just really easy dogs to communicate with. We'll get another German Shepherd to rescue and give a good life, and I know that's what Samantha would want us to do. So what does this terribly sad story have to do with being a plant-based wellness podcast? Well, Samantha was plant-based, and she really did like her vegetables. She was at the island chopping vegetables with me. She didn't chop, but she waited for fair share as I was making dinner every night. And I also believe that when it comes to wellness, there's nothing better than a companion animal, whether it's a dog or cat. I think that it is tremendously beneficial for everybody involved, both the animal and their they're human. You know, I always say that, you know, who rescued who, because they bring, you know, great joy to someone. And I think when you care for somebody else, again, it gets you out of your funk and gets you looking, at them and get your mind away from your problems. And especially when a dog, when it comes to a dog, I think they really demonstrate something that we really need these days. And that is unconditional love and, happy to see somebody. And, you know, they have a positive outlook continuously. They're not, judgmental or mopey. You know, they love to be around people. And we've written several prescriptions from my office for people of all ages to go and get a dog. Because, you know, not only is it good to rescue the dog and gives them a better life, but it provides such such an increase in people's well-being and has really lifted some of my patients out of depression. Again, if you have a dog, it's an accountability partner to go exercise. We had Eric O'Gray on the podcast and down to our conference, and, you know, he talked about Petey and, you know, going out and walking Petey. So I think it's a great thing to do if you're in an area where you can have a dog, and, you know, always make sure it's never fair to the dog if you haven't checked out whether your apartment or your neighborhood you can have a certain kind of dog. There have been studies looking at preventing depression. There was actually a three-arm study out of Australia. I don't know if stats, you know, 50% of the people in the United States have a dog, 39% of the people in Australia have a dog. But they did in Australia, they did an 8-month study looking at questionnaires on loneliness, positive, negative affect, and psychological distress. 71 people completed the study. People either got a dog or waited to the end of the 8 months to get a dog or didn't get a dog. And the people that got the dog, you know, again, did much better on their improved loneliness scale, positive affect. There have been other studies that looked at evaluation of cortisol levels. You know, cortisol levels decrease, which means, you know, there's decreased stress, increased oxytocin, which is a positive feel-good hormone. And again, people are usually more active when they have a dog to walk. So I think from a, you know, plant-based health and wellness, dogs are omnivores. They do quite well on a vegan diet. We fed Samantha and we feed Gretchen a V-dog. I'm not sponsored by the company. And again, they eat fruits and vegetables from the table. And they do take, you know, when Samantha started to have problems, I did give her an antioxidant supplement with turmeric and some other antioxidants to try to do what I could. You know, to make her do better. So they do quite well. And again, you know, again, I think, another contrasting study was a recent study released on looking at vitamin D, and they had 18,000 people, that were 50 years older, and they looked, at depression over, a 8-year period. They gave people 2,000 of vitamin D a day, and there was no change in their mood. There was no decrease in episodes of depression. So, you know, we look to pills to get us out of our funk, but I think we're best to look at, at doing something positive ourselves. Exercise is a great way to get out of depression. I have my running group here, that I go running with, and, you know, I go running every day. I take Gretchen as well, but, you know, that's a great way to, get past some stress and trauma. I don't think, you know, taking a supplement is the answer. Getting movement, when you're moving, again, you generate positive endorphins, which makes you feel better. Taking vitamin D has not been shown to decrease fractures. Increasing your exercise has been shown to decrease fractures. If you want to grow bone mass, muscle mass, then weight-bearing exercises such as walking and running are the things to do. So don't worry so much about your vitamin D levels. Get out and get some sun. Get it from the sun, not a pill. Taking a pill's never been shown to fix anything. It's not been shown to fix cancer. It's not been shown to fix diabetes as far as vitamin D goes. We know people that have low vitamin D's that, you know, it's like a chicken and the egg. So people tend to be sick. Their vitamin D levels are low. Is it because they're kind of eating it all up because they're sick? So the idea is to prevent these lifestyle diseases, get some sun, and not worry so much about supplements, and certainly not worry about getting blood tests for vitamin D, you know, every 6 months, 3 months. It's a good way for primary cares to make money in their labs, but there's absolutely no reason to go get vitamin D checked, because, again, artificially increasing it is not going to fix the problem. So we can focus on a lot of things we can fix without going to the blood lab by getting out and exercising, doing weight-bearing, eating plant-based. You also leach less calcium out of your bones if you're eating a less acidic diet. So plant protein has been shown all the way around as recently as well to be much more beneficial than animal protein with regards to the acidity and overall cardiac health. High protein diets have been shown to be associated with increased cardiovascular events, especially when that protein comes from animals. But not plants. We know people with kidney disease, they do much better on a lower protein diet and tolerate plant proteins much better. So get outside, get your vitamin D, get a dog, go for a walk, go for a run. And that's a good way to get around most things. Couple things that I've observed and seen this week. Cravings. I had a couple people talk to me about, one person even said they got up in the middle of the night and had a grilled cheese sandwich because they were hungry. And so the first question I ask is, you know, well, it takes a lot of effort to get up and, you know, make a grilled cheese sandwich. And most likely that was a craving rather than a true hunger, and a craving for salt and fat. So they were trying to change their diet, plant-based nutrition, kind of abruptly, you know, on and off. They had been going, you know, eating plant-based, not eating plant-based. So they were still struggling with the cravings associated with dairy, for the most part, in a high-fat diet, and people do. And so the justification was, you know, I'm hungry, because nobody will, you know, knock anybody for eating when they're hungry. But the reality of it is, we all live through the night without eating, you know, getting up and eating. So the best thing to do is kind of roll over. If somebody's glucose is low, we'd suggest that they have, you know, a piece of fruit, you know, to get their glucose up if it was low. That was not the case. I think, again, if people are embarking on a trying not to eat, I'm trying to do an intermittent fast, and then they get hungry and they can't take it and they decide to break that, I think that they're not ready to do that. I think if you make up your mind to do that intermittent fast, you really have to stick with it, because, again, we see a lot of the times that people try to eat one or two meals a day and then they get really hungry and then they start snacking on things that they don't think is that bad at night, but it's not doing them any good. So if you eat breakfast and lunch and then you have to snack on popcorn or rice cakes all through the evening, then that's not doing, or, you know, even things that are worse, nuts and grilled cheese sandwiches and ice cream, then that's not the right way to go about it. Another person had a craving for, you know, an ice cream sundae, and she didn't do it. She you know, got to the point where she, you know, suggested that her husband go out and pick one up. And he didn't do it because at the end he realized that she would be very angry that they, you know, kind of fell off the plant-based path to do that. So it was great that she recognized that she really wanted it, but she made it without it. And again, people that have cravings for sweet desserts, I think that you need to substitute fruit in, and quite a bit of fruit. I tell people to have fruit after every meal. I typically have fruit for breakfast and then some fruit after lunch and fruit after dinner, because I think you have to get those cravings satisfied. And you know, a good amount of fruit and sweet fruit. So at night, I like doing frozen banana and frozen berries with a little soy milk, you know, as a dessert, if, for my sweet dessert. I think that you have to have something along those lines that will substitute for not near as sweet, not near as gooey as a Blizzard, but it gives you that sense of satisfaction for something sweet, almost on par, as opposed to trying not to have any dessert and, you know, then really having these sweet cravings and going and getting some ice cream. So I'm all for fruit. You know, there's been numerous studies looking at diabetics and diabetics having fruit, and it doesn't raise their glucose, doesn't raise their triglycerides. If they're not eating the other high fat, oily things. So fruit's great, antioxidants, phytonutrients. It's a great food, it's sweet. And sooner, you know, your taste buds will change, so that becomes very sweet for you. Won't happen overnight, because if you have, you know, that real sweet tooth for chocolate gooey things, it's going to take a while, but hang in, adding, you know, your favorite fruits and making it in a way that you really enjoy it, really works. So if you like ice cream, you know, do the frozen fruit. If you're not, you know, if you're more into a pudding, then do a puree type of thing with the fruit, but, use fruit for just to satisfy those cravings. The other thing that I wanted to talk about a little bit about again is breathing. You know, I was walking out of the grocery store today, and you know, with COVID and our grocery stores down here, it's mandatory that people wear a mask if they go in most public places or stores. And so I saw a lady getting ready to go into the grocery store, and she hadn't put her mask on, and she was chewing gum. And she was chewing gum as she was walking. Of course, when you chew gum, most people have their mouth open. And so they're not breathing really through their nose, their mouth's open. And I just thought, well, that's just a great way to catch anything that's around. You know, it's that gum is, it's like a fly trap to catch things. And in this day and age, you know, especially with the COVID and infections, I think chewing gum is probably a pretty bad thing to do, especially if you're going to be in a public place. So I guess if you're in the privacy of your home and you want to chew some gum, it's one thing, but I would really avoid chewing gum when I'm out, especially in public places, because I think that's just a way to catch, you know, a way to lure viruses, so to speak. These aerosols kind of, you know, you have a sticky, it's like flypaper in your mouth. And, you know, I think it's very important to breathe through your nose and keep your mouth shut. When you breathe through your nose, you generate nitric oxide, which dilates your bronchial tubes. You get more oxygen in, which is great, especially if you have lung disease. The other thing that happens is you breathe through your nose, you activate all these natural anti-inflammatory, these antiviral, antibacterial properties that you have in your nose. And it's a first line of defense. If you have your mouth open, you don't get that advantage. If you have your mouth open and you're breathing through your mouth, it's a much shorter distance from your mouth to your lungs than it is from your nose to your lungs. Anybody that's had one of those swabs for COVID knows they put a big long stick down your nose. If they had to put that stick in the back of your mouth, it wouldn't need to be near as long. So breathing through your nose is real important as far as preventing infection. The other thing that happens is if you breathe through your nose, you're retaining a little bit more carbon dioxide. Hopefully you're breathing through using your diaphragm, so you're expanding your lungs, your diaphragm is going down, your pelvic floor is going down, it's activating your pelvic floor muscles. The other thing that's a good way to prevent incontinence, improve pelvic floor function. The other thing that happens when you use your diaphragm to breathe is it's going to engage your spinal cord. It's going to engage your vagus nerve. That vagus nerve, the phrenic nerve, is going to decrease. You're going to increase parasympathetic output. So heart rate goes down, blood pressure goes down, inflammatory compounds go down. So it's a calming. It's a way to get your blood pressure down. It's a way to get your whole body and your system in a calm state, as opposed to a highly driven sympathetic state where, you know, your heart rate's up, your blood pressure's up, you're generating inflammatory compounds, your cortisol's levels up. So in this day and age, breath, it couldn't be any more important than to concentrate on what you're breathing or how you're breathing. So through your diaphragm, through your nose, using your diaphragm, if you put your hand on your back, you should feel your hand expand out, not up. That's a good way to tell. You can, you know, feel your lungs and your ribs expand. You know, the longer you breathe in, you'll gradually, you know, feel your ribs under your arms and up into your neck, and finally expand lastly. And then you have a nice long exhale. It's a great thing to do when you're trying to increase your mobility, because if you're trying to lengthen a muscle or get more range of motion and you notice that you're holding your breath, then that's a sign that, you know, that's not a comfortable position for you. You're holding your breath, you're maybe bearing down. And so how do you breathe into that? So back off of that position and go back to that diaphragmatic breathing and make sure that you're concentrating, because when you increase parasympathetic tone, that's when that muscle's going to release and you're going to get more range of motion. So if you're holding your breath and bearing down and trying to just pull something loose, that's never going to work. So breathe into it, contract the muscle, and then really relax into it with a big, nice big, exhale as a way to get more out of that. The other thing that the breathing is going to help is your overall metabolism. If you're breathing through your mouth all the time, then again, you're breathing off a lot more carbon dioxide, which means that you have a lot less oxygen to be available to your tissues. If you don't get oxygen, enough oxygen to your tissues, specifically the mitochondria, you're going to be burning more carbohydrate than fat. So, no matter what you do, you're always going to be burning that carbohydrate off pretty easy. And you just kind of burn the top off. You're never really getting to your fat stores. If it comes down to an endurance activity and you want to save your glycogen and your carbohydrate stores, then you definitely want to breathe through your nose as much as you can. You want to keep that heart rate. It keeps your heart rate down, keeps your blood pressure down. You're burning more fat and you can go forever. So it's something to concentrate on. I usually try to start my run breathing through my nose, my easy days breathing through my nose. Then that keeps me under control. If I can't breathe through my nose, then I know I'm going too hard. I have to reassess things. So it depends on what you're doing a particular workout for as to how you choose to breathe. If you're going to be out and about and have a mask on, you need to really pay attention on how you're breathing. If you're breathing through your mouth with that mask on, you're really causing yourself, again, more harm as far as the carbon dioxide that you're breathing off and your metabolism. All these things are going to be accelerated. So if you're wearing a mask, you have to slow your activity down. You're not able to get in the oxygen if that's being filtered as much. People's oxygen saturations can potentially go down with their wearing a mask, depending on their ability to breathe and their effectiveness. But if you have somebody that's has poor breathing techniques and you put a mask on them, they can get into some real trouble. So make sure that you're concentrating on your breathing with the mask on. You're going to have to slow your activity down. I think it's horrible to do any kind of exercise in a gym with a mask on. Go outside and exercise. Don't try to do exercise with a mask on. I think, again, back to you need some good microbes, and you're going to get that by being outside. Our plant-based Strider running group is alive and well and doing good. We have lots of people joining online from far away and sharing their running stories and pictures of their running location. So if you'd like to jump over to Facebook and join the Plant-Based Striders, we'd love to have you. We run here in Port Charlotte Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday at 6 a.m. We go out for a set time and back, so we all finish together. So if you want to do a group in your area where you go out, so it doesn't matter what pace you are, we have walkers, runners, walker runners, run walkers. And it works out really nice. The accountability, people show up because they know somebody's going to be there. And it's a great way to be accountable. If you don't feel so good, and you have somebody to talk to when you're running and walking, it really makes it go better, and you're not focusing again so much inward. Oh, how I feel, and I'm tired, and all this other kind of stuff that your mind gets off of it. And the next thing you know, it's the sun's coming up, it's a beautiful sky, and you feel great. So go over to Facebook and join up with us if you'd like to. Ultimately, we're going to run the Treasure Coast Marathon in March 1st, God willing, and COVID is all gone. And so we're going to have lots of people in different categories. There's a 5K, 10K, half marathon, and relay and full marathon, if I didn't say that, at that particular race. It's small. It's in Florida. It's in Stuart, Florida. So we'd love to have you come down and run with us and meet us. So think about it, and you can start your training now and have plenty of time to amp up your mileage, amp up your nutrition, get your strength going, and we'd love to have you. I have people all the time saying, you know, I never thought I could run. And then I, you know, I start listening and I decided to try and it works. I had a lady today tell me that her mother was a Girl Scout. And then the Girl Scouts way back, they, you know, used to do this walk a little bit, run a little bit, walk a little bit, run a little bit. And if you think about it, our ancestors probably did run, walk as well. You know, you're chasing an animal or trying to get someplace, you run a little bit, you walk a little bit. It's a great way to get around. So, you know, the heart, by walking, you get to settle down, you get your heart rate come down, you get to catch your breath, you get to move different muscles. It's a great way to up your mileage and up your duration. So, go over and check it out. Go over to drdelaney.com, drdelaney, and check out our website. We are putting our nutrition classes up on Zoom for our members, so people can watch me cook and give a talk twice a week via Zoom in our membership practice until we're able to get back together again. And all these things are put up on our members-only webpage, so people that don't live near or people that miss the Zoom can see them online. So we have a lot of those things to offer up. I'd like to welcome back our registered dietitian, Addie Delaney Meinrich. She's back after taking a little maternity leave with my grandson, to have my grandson Caleb. And so they're doing really good, and Caleb is being a very good first assistant. So we're glad to have Addie back in the practice. It's a unique thing that we have a full-time registered dietitian able to help our members anytime they want, because in most insurance-driven practices, you can only see a registered dietitian, 15 minutes every quarter if you're a diabetic or you have kidney disease. Otherwise, you can't get a registered dietitian visit, and you can't do anything with anybody in 15 minutes. You've got to have some time to understand and talk. And so Addie does a really good job at helping people work on their plate and get their nutrition down, whether it's to lose weight or gain weight or to get their inflammation down or to help them heal from a surgery or reverse heart disease. She's really good at working and get cholesterols down, because it's difficult. There's so many different things that are hidden in food. You know, coffee creamers are a big one with oil in them, and, you know, nuts and crackers and sauces and different things that people get into that they had no idea that was causing the problem, because there's so many things out there to entice people that are vegan, but they're not necessarily healthy. And often they're good transition foods for a little bit, but they really don't get people where they're going with regard to their nutrition. So hop on over there, look to see what we have. You can get all our online courses and all our online content by joining a level one member and having a monthly call with Addie, or you can have a monthly call with both of us at level two, or you can go and be a full member of the practice. So check it out and see what you'd like. If you want to join us, you can email me at jamie@drdelaney.com if you have any questions. Otherwise, we're going to call it short this week, and hope to catch you next week. And as always, thanks for listening. Eat your vegetables. Go outside. Get some sunlight. Take a run, take a walk, and get a dog. And you might even want to name it Samantha.